What's holding you back from cultivating healthy relationships? Some help and hope are straight ahead on Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman.
I would say that anyone who has a strained or a broken relationship, if somebody is tired of struggling because of their relationship difficulties, maybe they struggle with insecurity, maybe they're easily offended, constantly afraid of rejection. And if somebody just has a difficult time communicating, maybe they feel like they're constantly being misunderstood or they're constantly feeling defensive, those are also warning signs that may indicate the need for a relational reset.
Welcome to Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Five Love Languages. Today, we all have blind spots in our lives and bad relational habits we need to break. Dr. Laurel Shaler wants to help you identify those so you can move toward those you love.
Dr. Shaler's book is our featured resource today at 5lovelanguages.com. The title is Relational Reset, Unlearning the Habits That Hold You Back. You can find out more again, 5lovelanguages.com. Gary, as soon as I saw that word reset, I think I got it. It's the old the computer that I used to have that would lock up. I'd hit Control Alt Delete and everything would recycle and start again, and I could move on with a fresh start. Do you understand that too?
Yeah, I think so, and I certainly understand applying that to relationships, because I think there are times in which we just kind of get into routines and we're doing the same thing, and it's not really productive, and we're not moving forward, and to do a reset, you know, and sometimes that can happen in different ways. But I'm excited about that topic today, and particularly talking with Dr. Shaler.
Dr. Laurel Shaler is a national certified counselor and licensed social worker. She's an associate professor at Liberty University, where she serves as the director of the Master of Arts and Professional Counseling Program. Dr. Shaler writes and speaks on the intersection of faith, culture, and emotional well-being. She's written Reclaiming Sanity, Hope and Healing for Trauma, Stress, and Overwhelming Life Events. She and her husband, an officer in the Navy Reserves, have one daughter and live in South Carolina. And our featured resource today is her new book, Relational Reset, Unlearning the Habits That Hold You Back. Again, you can go to 5lovelanguages.com to find out more.
Well, Dr. Shaler, welcome to Building Relationships.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, how God has directed you in your work that you have been doing the last several years. Give us a bit about your personal story.
Sure. Well, I grew up in a loving home, and I fell in love with Jesus at a very young age. And I also loved my church, especially my youth group. In fact, I loved it so much, I was sure that God wanted me to be a youth minister and stay in a youth group forever. But I quickly learned in college that that was not his path for me. Instead, he made it clear that he really wanted me to help hurting people. I wasn't exactly sure what that would look like, but he did lead me to pursue a master's degree in social work, and from there, a PhD in counselor education and supervision. So after some years working in mental health for the Department of Veterans Affairs, I went into teaching, and now I direct the Master of Arts in Professional Counseling program at Liberty University. So I'm excited to be there. While there, I've been able to earn a degree in theology, and I've just really loved integrating faith into all areas of life and really helping others to do the same, including through writing and speaking. So truly to pursue the Lord in every area and in every relationship.
Well, let's be personal a minute, and let me ask you, how did you meet your husband? And the question the young people ask, how did you know he was the right one? Or did
you?
Well,
my husband and I have a good story. Yeah. I think we have a pretty good story. When I was in college, my roommate was having a birthday party, and she invited her boyfriend to come, and he was in the Navy. Well, he invited a few of his Navy buddies to come, including Nick, who would become my husband. So the fun part is that that night at the party, right before he left, he told me he was going to marry me one day. I was so stunned that the day that I met him, he would tell me he was going to marry me one day. And I thought he was out of his mind and that, you know, I don't even know you. But it's true. We got married about 2.5 years later, and we've been married for over 15 years now.
Wow. That's quite a story. Nick's a prophet.
On that, he was.
Yeah. Well, you know, as you shared how God led you in the various ministries that you have done now, it's exciting to see God's hand in our personal lives, in our family life, as well as in our vocations. So let's come to the topic today, this whole thing of relational reset. How did you come up with that reset idea and tie that to relationships?
Yeah, well, I really wanted to write a book on relationships for a long time. And when this idea first came to my mind, it was actually centered on friendships. But the Lord just kept expanding that topic into a book about these different problem areas that really interfere with our ability to have any kind of healthy relationship. And so when I started looking at how we could alter our thoughts and feelings and behaviors and really start over from a healthy place so that we could improve our relationships, this notion of resetting our relationships came to mind.
So what are the indicators that a person might be in need of a relational reset?
I would say that anyone who has a strained or a broken relationship, if somebody is tired of struggling because of their relationship difficulties, they may be in need of a relational reset. Maybe they struggle with insecurity. Maybe they're easily offended, constantly afraid of rejection. That person may also be in need of a relational reset. And if somebody just has a difficult time communicating, maybe they feel like they're constantly being misunderstood or they're constantly feeling defensive, those are also warning signs that may indicate the need for a relational reset.
And I'm guessing that most of us somewhere along the line could use a little reset. Would you agree with that?
I think it's true for everyone. Yes, sir. I think it's true for all of us.
Have you found this to be helpful in your own relationships?
I really have. I truly wrote this book from a place of me too. In fact, I share quite a few personal stories where I learned tough but important lessons about relationships. And I'm definitely not writing this from a place of perfection. I'm not perfect in my relationships, but I do strive to keep these concepts in mind and not allow my own stuff to get in the way of my relationships. And I think most importantly, just learning to give all of these things over to God and centering our lives on Him, because our relationship with Him is what's really most important.
Yeah. If we waited until we got perfect before we write, none of us would be writing, right?
Oh, absolutely. That's right. There would be no books.
Yeah.
That resource is the book by Dr. Laurel Shaler. It's titled Relational Reset, Unlearning the Habits That Hold You Back. Just go to 5lovelanguages.com to find out more. Again, 5lovelanguages.com. Dr. Shaler, I said the Control-Alt-Delete a little earlier. Does that explain a little bit of what you're talking about relationally?
Well, I love that because I definitely remember doing that as well, being able to reset your computer in that way. And that is exactly, I would say, what I'm talking about. It's just having an opportunity to start fresh, wipe the slate clean, and just start again. So that's really what it's all about.
Well, let's look at one of those struggle areas. I think the whole issue of expectations, all of us get married and we have ideas of what, you know, it's going to be like. I remember I had the idea my wife would make me happy forever. didn't quite work out that way, nor did I make her happy forever. But let's talk about that. How can we judge if our expectations are realistic or unrealistic, and how does that impact relationships?
Yeah, well, first of all, we have to acknowledge that everyone with whom we are in a relationship will at some point disappoint us if we're in a relationship long enough. But we also have to remember that we'll disappoint them too. So we have to expect that there will be some disappointments in both directions. And if we put others on pedestals and we expect them to be perfect, we're going to wind up really hurt. So we just can't expect too much of others. I was actually watching a TV program not long ago, and in the midst of an argument between two of the characters, one said to the other something to the effect of, "You set the standard so high that no one could ever meet it." So if that's something that somebody does, then the expectations are not realistic. We have to keep in mind that we're human, others are human, and we want healthy boundaries and respect and love, but we can't expect perfection.
Mm. What would be an example of an unrealistic expectation as one enters marriage?
I think that's a great question. As you think about getting married, I was with some folks the other day, and one of the younger ladies is preparing for her marriage in a few months, and one of the older ladies said, just don't go into your marriage expecting to change him. And the younger woman said, oh, no, I love him. He's great. I don't have any plans to change him. That's not my goal anyway. But I think that oftentimes we do go into marriage expecting that we're going to change the other person, that there are things that we don't like about them while we're dating, but that's okay because they'll change. I'll change them after we get married. So if we even expect that we're going to be able to change someone else, then we're setting our own selves up for disappointment because we don't have that kind of power.
Yeah, and sometimes we don't see things that we think need to be changed before we get married. But after we get married, we discover some things that we wish they would change.
Right. Once you start living together and spending a lot more time together, that's when you start seeing some things that maybe you don't like so much.
Now, is there a place in marriage, once you've made a commitment, you are married, and you discover some of these things that are not what you thought it was going to be, it's not turning out like you thought it would turn out, they're not treating you the way you thought they would treat you, where do we come to the place, or two questions maybe, is there a positive way to get them to change or to encourage them to change? And then when do we get to the place where we come to accept those things that they're not changing?
Right. Well, of course, we should individually want, as believers, to grow more Christ-like as our relationship with Him deepens. And as we become more like Him, we're better able to reflect His love to other people, including our spouse. But at the same time, we're not the Holy Spirit for our spouse. We can't convict them. We can't make them change. We can share our preferences, and I think that's a part of learning to communicate assertively, explaining that what you would prefer out of them. And we can also ask them, if it gets to that point, if they're willing to go for either individual counseling or marriage counseling, or maybe to meet with a pastor or get an older male mentor, somebody who can help them walk along. And the same could be true for a woman, if it's a woman, to have an older female mentor. So we should set boundaries and maintain reasonable expectations, but it's not helpful if we decide that because the person is not who we want them to be, that they're not a worthy person. And I have to think of all of the quote-unquote irreconcilable differences that result in divorce, the number of people who get divorced and that's their reason, is we just don't get along. It doesn't have to be that way. We can work on improving ourselves, and I always focus more on what can I do about myself. I wasn't always this way. When I was first married, it was much more about my husband changing. But as I've matured and grown and learned, I've worked more on changing myself than I have on changing him.
So what you're saying is a relational reset is not changing the other person. You can't hit their reset button. You need to work on the log in your own eye and then let the relationship go. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. This really is about working on yourself. And as a part of working on yourself, it may be learning to communicate more effectively and to stand up for yourself and to be assertive. But the benefit or the reward of being assertive isn't getting what you want. It's actually having been assertive. That's the benefit. That's the reward. And sometimes the other person will not do what we want them to do, or they won't care about our preferences, or they won't meet our expectations, but we can feel better knowing that we've done all that we could on our end, even if we can't force them to change or make them change.
Dr. Shaler, I'm thinking of a situation that my wife had. It's much easier for me to think of Andrea's life than it is my own, but it's a good example of this whole expectation thing. And she had a friend, and she invited the friend to, you know, view something with her. And the response that she got back from her friend was, it really hurt her. You know, she didn't get the response that she wanted to about this, you know, thing in her life. And she saw a counselor. It was the counselor that both of us were seeing at the time. And the counselor's name was Tom. And Tom said, you know, that's really sad that you didn't get the response, but you have to realize that you came into that, it's on both sides. You were hurt by her response, but you had an expectation. You had an agreement with what she was going to give you. And so you have to look at what it was that was going on inside you and the agreement that you made that, you know, that what you wanted her to do. That is the thing that you have to look at. And it sounds like you are talking about that, the depth, you know, kind of peeling back the layers of your life in order to look at that. Is that true?
It is. And, you know, sometimes we unintentionally set people up to reject us. We set people up to say no. For example, if we know that somebody is really overwhelmed and they're really busy and they have a lot going on, but we go to them and make an extra request on their life and they say no, we may feel rejected and take it personally, when really, if we had been more thoughtful about it, we never would have gone to them in the first place. We would have realized that that's not the best person to go to at this time for that request. So I think we have to be more thoughtful and aware of what we're communicating with other people in terms of what we expect or want from them.
Yeah, I think the whole thing of coming to the place where we do accept some things about other people, especially in a marriage relationship, which is, you know, the closest relationship. I remember when we first got married, you know, I had visions of we would have devotions together every morning. You know, we'd sit there and have breakfast and have devotions together and pray together. And, you know, I mean, she was a Christian. I was a Christian. You know, to me, it was a logical thing to do. But what I didn't realize is that she didn't wake up mentally, you know, that early. She got up, but she didn't wake up.
Right.
And there came a place, and I preached to her, you know. I mean, I was in seminary studying to be a pastor, so I preached to her, you know, meet God early in the morning, you know. And I talked about, you know, George Mueller and those men in the past and women who did this. And
right.
Oh, poor lady. And I finally came to realize that's an unrealistic expectation. To expect that to happen, you know. Now, we can do that some other time of the day, but not in the morning when she's not mentally alert and awake and thinking and feeling, you know. So I think allowing each other to be human, and is one of the points that you're making in this, is really an important thing. How about this whole thing of disappointment? I think you said earlier that some disappointment is inevitable.
It is. It really is. And if we're not prepared for disappointments, then it can sneak up on us and have a much bigger emotional impact than it should. I'm walking through the early stages of marriage with some friends of mine, and that's something that we talk about, just their expectations of their new spouses, and then the number of times that they get disappointed. And I can think about being an early wife and having those same things. I'll give you an example. I remember that I used to think my husband and I should go to bed at the same time every night, that we should go to bed together. And if he said, well, I'd really like to stay up and watch the basketball game, I might feel disappointed that he was going to watch the basketball game and not come to bed at the same time. But now, over 15 years later, I'm going to bed. I'm sleepy. So, you know, you just learn to manage those expectations and manage those disappointments and really to decide what's really a big deal and what's not a big deal. I think when we're newly married, especially, everything seems to be more of a mountain. And now we realize they're really molehills.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's great. In a dating relationship, when you are having conflicts, even at that stage of the relationship, does there come a time in which you see so many red flags waving that you just have to say, I think this relationship is not going to marriage? Have you seen that?
Yes, absolutely. And I do think that is such a critical component of premarital counseling, especially for those that are engaged. They're looking to marriage, even in the midst of planning a wedding, that if you realize that this is not what God is calling you to, that this is not a good fit, that there are too many barriers to work through, then end it now before you make that covenant relationship. And you're just going to have a lot more heartache later. That's not to say that you can't work through some of those issues, but if there are red flags and you're not married, be very thoughtful about that and consider whether or not it's time to let go of that relationship and look to something that's more in alignment with who you are and what your preferences are and ultimately and most importantly, the type of person that God would have you to be with.
You know, sometimes I've experienced over the years, not often, but a couple who were engaged, they'd already sent out the wedding announcements, and one of them came to this conclusion that this is not what we should do. And I think many times we feel, well, I can't stop now because all these people know about it and I'll be embarrassed mm-hmm. if they find out. But far better to be a little embarrassed before you get married than to have to go through all the trauma and pain later on after you get married.
I knew someone who knew that she knew going in that it was not the right decision and just felt the pressure from a family member to go ahead and get married. And, you know, it didn't work out. He was abusive. And, you know, one thing, whenever we talk about relationships and in marriages in particular, you know, I always want to get a plug in for if somebody is a victim of domestic violence to just get to safety. And if you don't mind, I'll share a hotline, 1-800-799-7233. Because when we talk about setting boundaries and expectations and disappointments, none of this implies that anybody should receive abuse. And if somebody is being abused, then I just want to encourage them to get some help and get to safety.
Yeah, I can imagine that there's a listener that just heard what you said, and they're asking, what was that number again? So give it again.
Mm-hmm. Sure, 1-800-799-7233. And this is a domestic violence hotline, so they would be able to give them resources for how to get to maybe a domestic violence shelter or just get to safety.
When you think in terms of conflict, and all of us have conflicts because we're human, and humans don't always think
right.
The same way, what are some of the negative ways that people seek to solve conflicts? And how would you know when you really need to stop and push reset and find a different way to approach conflicts?
Right. Well, there are many reasons why people don't want to address conflict. And sometimes when they pursue addressing conflict, it comes out of a place of anger and frustration and fear. And so sometimes that can come across in a really aggressive manner. So anytime we're trying to work through conflict at the top of our lungs, we're not doing it right, because that's not the best way and the best time to address our conflict. So we have to be aware of how we're feeling and whether or not we're in a place where we can emotionally deal with the conflict. So sometimes it's better to just take a time out and to really, you know, pray and maybe take a walk and do some breathing and just really think through what our expectations are of the other person and what we want the outcome of the conflict to be. And then we can go back into that relationship and we can be more assertive rather than aggressive and angry and just yelling and screaming.
Gary, we've talked about this before, that opposites attract, and you've discussed this whole thing of a person who doesn't, you know, a spouse who doesn't want to deal with any of the conflict because they've grown up in a house where conflict is bad, right?
Yeah, I think that's true. And how would you address that?
So if somebody is not wanting to address conflict, I think the kind of analogy that comes to my mind is like a bird sticking its head in the sand. Like that doesn't take the world away. Everything is still there. They're just ignoring it. So the problems will never get resolved if we're not willing to talk about them. And I really do think that communication is critical to have a healthy relationship. And of course, there's good communication, there's poor communication. And so we want to work on having healthy communication, but without it, we'll never get things resolved. So, you know, when I talk with somebody who is just not wanting to address it, maybe they think it won't do any good, it won't matter, the other person doesn't care what I think, they're just going to put me down or ignore me. You know, I just encourage them about what it would look like for them to speak up for themselves and to be assertive. And again, we talk about what I mentioned earlier, that they can have a reward knowing that they were assertive. So even if the other person doesn't change or doesn't listen to them or doesn't want to work through the conflict, they can know that they've done everything that they can. It's tough because sometimes we just don't want to lose the relationship. We're afraid of losing the relationship, so we just take it. Or maybe we're too insecure to bring something up. Maybe we don't believe we're strong enough emotionally to handle the fallout, or we become concerned that the other person would become more aggressive. But we really have to pray and seek discernment to know when and how to address conflict. But ignoring it is usually not the answer.
Yeah. What's the role of listening in solving conflicts?
You know, it's so often that we listen to speak rather than listen to understand. So as somebody else is talking, all we're doing is thinking about how we're going to respond, and we're waiting for them to stop talking so we can give something back to them. But if we would stop and listen to actually hear and understand the other person, we may find that we're not as far apart as we thought we were. We may find that our empathy starts to go up so that we're able to start putting ourselves in their shoes. Maybe we start to have a more positive feeling towards them rather than just listening in order to go ahead and get our side of the conflict stated.
But what happens when a couple doesn't solve conflicts? You know, maybe they have an argument and somebody walks out and they don't talk about that one. It's like it kind of goes under the rug. And then there's another one 3 weeks later and another one and another one. And it just builds up. What happens in a relationship when we allow that to happen?
Well, I think the more conflict that you allow to go unchecked, the wider the gulf becomes between you and your spouse. There are times when maybe you choose to let something go. Maybe you realize it's minor, it's not worth it. Maybe your spouse comes home and they've had a really bad day and they're kind of grumpy and you're like, okay, I'm not going to, you know, mention to them that I thought they were rude to me tonight because I know they've had a bad day. And we just, you know, love covers a multitude of sins, as the word says. So maybe we're just going to offer them some grace and we're not going to point that out. But if they come home every night and they're grumpy and you feel like they're rude to you and you never address it, then what are you going to do? You're probably going to start avoiding them and finding excuses to not be there. Or maybe you just don't talk with them at all. And so you and your spouse stop communicating altogether. So you have to again, it kind of comes back to this discernment piece of knowing when to start addressing conflict. And I actually tend to think that you should address things sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many times do people wind up in marriage counseling and really they're just trying to get that checkbox for their divorce, that they are not invested because they've had these problems for a long time and they did not seek help soon enough. In their minds, it's over. Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean it's too late, but as you know, somebody who's on the other side of the table, I'm like, I wish you guys had come a long time ago because I think it would have been better for you if you had worked on these issues sooner.
And I think when they don't, you know, they get to the place where they're saying to themselves, this is not going to work. We're not compatible. We made a big mistake. And as you said, that's often when they go to the counselor. And really just to say, well, we went for counseling and it didn't help.
You know? Right. Absolutely.
And that's tragic.
Blame the marriage counselor.
But I fully agree. The sooner you can reach out for help, especially in the early years of marriage, the more likely are you going to find solutions. How does this, you talk about this in the book, changed thinking and how that leads to changed feelings. Because often we go on our feelings. So talk a little bit about how those two interface.
Right. Well, you know, every feeling results from a thought. So most of the time we don't just feel sad or feel happy, but something triggered those feelings. So, for example, if we're walking down the hallway at church and someone doesn't speak to us, we might feel rejected. But something happens between the encounter and the feeling. The thought is what happens. So, for example, in split seconds, we might think something like, I wonder if Sally's mad at me or no one at this church likes me. And if we have a thought like that, we're going to have a negative feeling. But if instead of that thought, or maybe as a means to counteract that thought, we tell ourselves, Sally may be in a rush, or Sally sure has her hands full with her kids, then we may not feel as rejected. A dear friend of mine uses the acronym Q-TIP, and it stands for Quit Taking It Personally. She heard it on a radio program a long time ago, but she's applied it to counseling. And I just love that. When we stop taking things so personally in our thoughts, then we can start feeling better or stop feeling bad. And the truth is that maybe in that scenario, Sally was angry, or maybe she doesn't like you, but that doesn't have to result in feeling rejected by the world, because ultimately we can remind ourselves of who God says we are. And when we believe those words from the scripture, when we believe that to our core, we can feel a whole lot better about ourselves and more secure in our other relationships. So if we work on changing our thinking, we can see a huge difference in our feelings.
How do you begin to do that? You know, if you grew up in a home where you felt like, you know, you weren't loved and you kind of grew up with a sense of everything's wrong in my life, How do you begin to turn the corner to think more positively, to think more biblically about situations?
You know, it really takes learning to stop your thoughts and choose an alternative thought. And it's not about making something up. It's not about lying to yourself, but it truly is about trying to speak truth to yourself. So even in that example that I just gave, maybe Sally was angry, you know, but instead of thinking Sally's angry with me and then feeling rejected, you might think, I may need to check in on Sally later and see if everything's okay with us. And then just go about your day and not allow that to cause you to feel so bad emotionally. And this takes a lot of time and effort, especially if you're somebody who is so used to immediately thinking something negative, that every time somebody doesn't text you back right away or every time somebody seems to give you the cold shoulder, if you automatically feel sad or, again, rejected. If that's you, then it does take a lot of time and effort, but it's certainly not impossible. You mentioned childhood, and a lot of that plays into how we interact with people in our relationships today because so much of it is based on our attachment style, and that's developed in childhood initially.
Talk a little bit about that. What do you mean by attachment styles?
So research shows that 40%, that's a huge number, 40% of adults have insecure attachment styles. And there's two primary types of insecure attachment styles, and they're avoidant and anxious. So if you're somebody who's anxious, preoccupied, then you're somebody who looks to others to complete you. You don't feel whole unless you're with someone else. And then there's two types of avoidant attachment styles, those who are dismissive, and they emotionally distance themselves from others, and those who are fearful and become afraid of getting too close or distant from others. So whether you're avoidant or you're anxious, those are both insecure attachment styles. But the best attachment style is just a secure attachment style. And this is basically when somebody feels connected to other people, but they also feel free. They feel safe in the relationship. They don't live in fear of losing them. It doesn't mean that the relationships are perfect, but that they feel safe in them and that they trust the person and that they have healthy boundaries and that they overall feel good in the relationship. So we develop our attachment styles often in childhood, but the hopeful news is that even as an adult, you can improve your attachment style and move from insecure to secure.
And how might you do that? What are the kind of steps that you might have to go through to make that happen?
Well, one of the things that I notice is that sometimes our attachment style seems to vary dependent on the people that we're in a relationship with. So we do have to kind of take stock of who we're in relationships with, and in particular, who are we spending a lot of time with, and are those relationships healthy? And if they're not healthy, we have to work on whatever we can do, as much control as we have, to make those relationships healthy. And a lot of this goes back to looking at what we're thinking, what we're telling ourselves, how we're acting and reacting, because if we spend all of our time worried, avoiding, anxious, distant, afraid, then that relationship will never be healthy and we'll never have a secure attachment. So I think as an adult, really even as a child, but we're able to think through this more the older we get, looking at our relationship with God as being that foundational relationship. And if we can know without a shadow of a doubt that God loves us unconditionally, we can 100% have a secure attachment to God. And even though we cannot expect other people to be like God because they will never be and they'll never take his place and they'll never be perfect, but we can start to trust him in our relationships with others and become more secure to other people.
Dr. Laurel Shaler is with us today. Relational Reset is our featured resource at fivelovelanguages.com. fivelovelanguages.com. Dr. Shaler, what you just said, I see a lot of husbands, a lot of men look to their wives for this validation, for security, safety, and when their wife doesn't react or respond the way they want them to, then, you know, they've got to figure out, you know, what's wrong with me, and not having the strength then to move toward their wife with a secure feeling about the relationship. Can you talk about the dynamic of a husband and wife when he is always thinking, why'd you do that? Why'd you look at me that way? That kind of thing.
Yeah, again, I think it comes back to managing expectations and being able to communicate. And we know that women by and large, have an easier time communicating and expressing our thoughts and feelings than our husbands do. We're more likely to be open to sharing and wanting to talk and wanting to express ourselves than they are. And I think that that's part of it, is just developing that type of relationship where the other person feels safe and free to share their thoughts and feelings. Because so often, you know, men have been taught to not express themselves in that way and to not share their emotions. But, you know, ultimately, if they have to stuff everything down, then they're never going to be able to address those types of things with anyone, especially their spouses.
So those who have grown up in a home where they have not sense this security of being attached to the parent, and consequently they as adults tend to have that same framework that you can't trust anyone. Are they likely to get beyond that without counseling, or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that it certainly can come down to needing counseling, and I absolutely recommend that for those that may need that. I think that there are ways to, again, to work on developing security in relationships. Even if you don't go through counseling, it's just not too late when you're an adult. It may be that you need somebody who specializes in attachment. And if that's the case, I encourage folks to go ahead and work on this issue with somebody who is trained specifically in attachment. And of course, I would recommend somebody who has a background in Christian counseling, as they're going to be able to really speak to that connection with God and how important that relationship is in order to have secure attachments with others.
In your book, if a person were reading your book dealing with that topic, you share some things that will help them, their thinking, begin to think differently. Because I think, in a sense, a book is a counselor. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, you can get this resource for a lot less than money than going for an hour of therapy. It's a start anyway.
Yeah, and I think often if a individual will read a book that deals with these kind of topics, and that's what your book does, it does help them begin to think differently and do some things differently. And sometimes they can have adequate change without going to a counselor. But at least if not, it'll point them to know what to say to a counselor when they get there.
Yeah. Absolutely. It can really shed light on some of the struggles that you may be having. And it can be a catalyst for change. You can use a resource like this to get started. And you may find that there are some areas that you can work on just yourself and the book and the Word of God and through prayer. And then there may be some areas that you think, I really need some more help with this. So I certainly encourage that as well.
Another topic, Dr. Shaler, that you deal with in this book, you use the term hurtful help. Tell us what you mean by that, and maybe give us your own experience of how you went through this.
Yeah, so I kind of think about all the fixers in our lives. I know a lot of counselors and social workers and therapists, and being one myself, I get it. You know, we try and fix people, but we really have to kind of wrestle against that, knowing that ultimately we can't fix anyone, and we can really do damage to a relationship by trying to fix or help others in a way that is really not helpful. And so part of what I share about is just our own experience. My husband and I adopted last year, or 2017 rather, adopted a beautiful little girl. But the adoption process was long, and it can be really painful. And so I learned a lot through that experience. We both learned a lot through that experience. And this is kind of where this hurtful help really came to light from my own personal life. What's interesting is when we try to help someone along, or really we try and help God along, we try and come up with ideas for them. Maybe we assume there are avenues they haven't explored. In our particular journey, we were asked many times, so, you know, what's going on? Why haven't you been chosen yet? Why haven't you adopted yet? As if there was something wrong with us. I remember one time meeting someone who asked if we had children, and when I responded that no, we didn't, she said, oh, there's plenty of time for that. And then she asked how long we'd been married. Well, my response at that time, I think, was 13 years. So, you know, she didn't say another word, but she realized that, you know, oh, okay, maybe there's something that I don't know. So a part of our adoption process has led me to be more sensitive to others and to be more cautious about trying to help people or try to fix people. There is a place for helping others. And sometimes there's a place for helping others when they don't specifically ask for it. For example, you might have a widow in your neighborhood and you see that her grass has grown really tall and you may go and say, hey, can I cut your grass for you? That's something that's actually helpful even though they didn't ask for help. But other times we try to help people when they didn't ask for it and they don't want it, and it hurts our relationships when we try to help them.
Do you find in marriages that often, I'm thinking particularly of men, that a wife shares some struggle at work maybe that she encountered and he immediately launches into how she can handle that and she acts adversely to that? What's going on in that dynamic?
Yes. Absolutely. It is so common for the husband to want to fix the problem for the wife. And there's lots of reasons for that. You know, I think in a lot of cases, the intention is pure and it's because he loves her. Sometimes it's because he has difficulty handling her distress and he just wants her to be all better. So he wants to fix the issue so then she's better. But ultimately, oftentimes the person just wants to be heard. They just want to be able to share. I can't tell you the number of times when I've, you know, tried to share something that's on my heart with someone, and then the person just instantly wants to jump to a conclusion and try and tell me the resolution and what I need to do to fix the problem instead of just listening. And that's something that I think a lot of wives want, is they just want their husbands to listen to them. And sometimes they want a tissue, and sometimes they don't, and sometimes they want an arm around their shoulder, and sometimes they don't. But mostly they just want a listening ear, and they want some compassion. And then if they want your help, they'll ask for it.
And a lot of husbands have difficulty understanding that because they think,
that's true.
Why would she not want help? I mean, I can solve this for her.
Right, right. But he can solve it in his way, not necessarily in the way that she wants.
And chances are, you know, she has her own ideas of how to work through this, but him listening to her and saying, I can understand, honey, how you would feel that way, you know, it gives her the freedom and courage to go ahead and think through what she might want to do. But you're right. If she asks for advice, that's the time to give the advice.
Right.
Now, another thing you talk about, another term you use is a miracle question. You talk about a miracle question that you've asked many, many of your clients. Explain what you mean by that.
Yeah, well, the miracle question comes from solution-focused brief therapy, and that was developed by a married couple, Steve DeShazer and Insoo Kim Berg. And there are lots of variations of this question, but it goes a little something like this. Imagine that while you were asleep tonight, you were given a miracle, and when you wake up, your life is exactly what you would like it to be. How would you know you had received a miracle? So I've asked this question many times, and what's remarkable to me is that not one client answered with something outlandish. No one said that they would become a billionaire overnight or that they would move to a beautiful deserted island. Nobody said anything like that. Instead, everything they said were things that were reasonable and within their reach. And so this activity helped them to prioritize and to set goals focused in the present rather than them being stuck in the past. And it serves as a reminder that we can't change the past. We can praise the Lord that when we repent, He forgives. We can praise Him that He binds up our broken hearts and that He never leaves us or forsakes us, and that we can cast our cares upon Him. And we can also press on towards what is ahead and what He has for our future. And this miracle question really helps us to do that.
So give us that question again, a sample of that question again.
Yeah.
And then maybe give us an example of the kind of answer that someone might have given.
So the question might go, imagine that while you are asleep tonight, you were given a miracle. And when you wake up, your life is exactly what you would like it to be. How would you know you had received a miracle? And so, for example, I've had clients say, well, if I woke up in the morning and I knew I had a miracle because my husband would treat me kindly at dinner tonight. And it might be something as simple as that. Or I would be able to call my mother without being upset with her, or I would have a good day at work. These are the types of comments that I would hear. It was never anything that was extreme or completely out of their reach. Now, sometimes it wasn't something that they had total control over, but at the same time, they were able to explore their own thoughts, feelings, behaviors that might be interfering with their ability to have what they were wanting to happen to actually happen. So then that's the direction that we would go in. We would just look at, okay, let's explore what goes on, what happens for you when you call your family member and you get upset when you call them, you know, looking at why they're upset and how they can work on controlling their emotions and the types of communication styles that they use with that individual, and just kind of go from there to help them move forward wherever they're stuck in their relationships.
So what have they identified when they answer that question?
They're identifying what they would like to be different in their life. They're identifying what would be better in their life, a problem that they're having, something that they would like to see changed or improved.
Let's look at another topic, Dr. Shaler, the whole thing of forgiveness. And you talk about setting boundaries when extending forgiveness. Now, what do you mean by that?
Right. Well, I think it's important to understand that we can forgive and set boundaries. So starting with forgiveness, we're commanded to forgive. Scripture is clear on that. There are many references, but one of my favorites is the discussion between Peter and Jesus in Matthew 18, when Peter asked how many times he should forgive his brother when he sins against him, and Jesus says, I tell you not seven times, but 77 times. And my pastor, Dr. Jimerson, says it like this. He says, stop counting and keep forgiving. And I think that's just a really important thing that we have to remember, that forgiveness is a requirement. So while we're called to forgive, it doesn't mean that we have to be formats. We can make it clear where we end and where the other person begins. So we can forgive while letting the other person know our preferences for the future. So for example, we can forgive a friend for not showing up for a lunch date, but we can make it clear that we would expect a call in the future if she had to cancel. So we just want to make it clear that, you know, we forgive, but that doesn't mean that we're going to tolerate that type of behavior in the future. So that's where we can forgive and set boundaries.
Well, there's a lot of other topics that you discuss in the book, but this has been a delightful conversation. And I really hope that our listeners will get a copy of this and read it, because I think it will help in every relationship, not just marriage relationships, but in every relationship. So thanks for being with us today, Dr. Shaler.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
An awful lot of hope here. And again, the title of our featured resource today is Relational Reset, Unlearning the Habits That Hold You Back. It's by Dr. Laurel Shaler, and we have it linked to the website, fivelovelanguages.com. Again, go to fivelovelanguages.com.
And next week, we'll hear questions from you about the ups and downs of your relational struggles.
Don't miss our Dear Gary broadcast for March. A big thank you today to our production team, Steve Wick, Janice Todd, and Ryan McConaughey. Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman is a production of Moody Radio in association with Moody Publishers, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute. Thanks for listening.